by the end of the year, when they finalize the audit for 2011-12, we are aware where we stand. It is pleasing, members, that over the last 5-6 years, we have been getting clean audits, and with the discussions that we also had with the Auditor General, if, for example, if you look at the areas, the green means good, the amber means in progress, and then the red, where there is actually a challenge. So if you look at the report from Auditor General, majority of the areas, it's green, it's good. In terms of the compliance, everything is actually green. In areas of performance, there is an area where we're looking at IT governance framework. The reason that is in progress, the auditors will be doing the audit now and also next year. So that's why they've kept it at in progress. If you also look at the financials, those are some of the areas that we are actually looking at to ensure that we maintain compliance and in terms of the internal control. But if you also look at the governance, because it's divided into leadership, financial and performance management, almost everything is green. If you look at the governance area, with the board members that is here, they drive that very strong. Everything is actually green. So the report is indicating that by the time we do the audit, we'll get a clean audit again. Members, it's on page 9 with the small one that I have. It's on page 9, members. We've tried to look at, because the chairperson of the portfolio committee requested that when we look at financial, we actually also produce the trends. So we continue doing that, looking from 2006 up to the forecast 2011-2012. The OPEX grant, the grant from the shareholder, we've managed to get 126 million. And also looking at the CAPEX for this year, around 37.6 million for also the radars. One of the areas that we have been the drive for the commercialization program. If you remember, we said one of our programs, the commercialization program, from 2006-2007 up to now, 2011-2012, we've moved from 46 million rands to 81 million rands revenue that we get commercially from aviation. And then for other commercial services, we've moved from 7.2 million to 15.8 million rands. And if you look at the total revenue, we've moved from 170 from 206 up to now to 268.4 million. This is the breakdown in terms of the resources. The grant is around 55% of our revenue. Aviation income is 35%. Commercial is 7%. And other revenue is around 3%. Our CFO will be talking about the upcoming budget for the coming year, but the changes are not that much. The government is going to be around 57 contribution and aviation around 35. And there's a 33. There's an increase on commercial income in terms of percentages of around 8. But our CFO will talk about that. Moving to the next one, the expenses, we've tried to maintain our administration expenses and also operational expenses. One area, members, I would like you to pay attention to, the employee costs have been going up because we've made a conscious decision in terms of the strategy to build the core competencies within the organization. Hence, I was indicating that we have increased the number of professionals, the technical people, and semi-technical. So that's why we still have that increase in that area. It's more on the core business of the organization. That is the next slide, members, is actually the breakdown of the cost. The employee cost is around 59%, and operational cost 31%, administration 3%, depreciation and financial cost around 3%. We have an objective of keeping our employee cost between 55 and up to 59. Anything above that, it becomes a challenge for us for operation, because we are an information-based institution, so we need a number of bodies to do the work. Before, members, we move to the financials, I would like to highlight some of the opportunities and the challenges that the organization is faced with. One, it's an area of ICT. With the work that we do, operationally, the organization do need high computing systems in place, and that requires a lot of money. There has been a system that was bought more than 5 years ago, and it has reached its life cycle. So we are having some discussions with the shareholder and see whether we cannot get some funding, especially at that area. Some members will remember the next one. Some members will remember that around 2008, they visited the South African Weather Service, and they were taken to the Waterkloof land. And at the time, we didn't have the title deed. We managed to get the title deed. So now we are in the process of rezoning the land, and also we're doing impact assessment to see how much of the land can be used for development. So we are moving with that process. That's one of the opportunities. And also looking future for the PPP partnership. Those are some of the initiatives that are actually put in place for the coming future. The other area that I think we need to be putting more emphasis as a country is to develop an integrated early warning system, working together with other departments, for example, Department of Communication to disseminate the information, and also working closely with the community. And I think we also started that process. I'm honored and humbled with the fact that Deputy Minister, she was actually pioneering that we go and have sessions with the community so that they have an understanding of the introduced early warning system. You find that sometimes on ETV, when they report and survey weather, they will say it's the weather service, and you'll see a red color or yellow color or an amber color. We want people to understand what does that mean, how they should be reacting to that. So we have been going with the minister, the deputy minister, to all the provinces, some of the provinces, and we'll continue with that program, working with the local municipalities as well. The other area that we had a challenge from taking over from being a department to a directorate, one of the liabilities was the unfunded post-retirement liability that we had, and it was becoming bigger and bigger. And the board said, let's look at the funds that we have to see whether that we cannot reduce and transfer the liability, looking at the funds that we have. So we started with that process of looking at that and having some of the people taking for post-medical aid when they retire, where they take the money and do the investment themselves. And some of the people are refusing to actually accept that, but we have reinsurance for that. The Waterkloof land, I'm passionate about it, I'm repeating it again, it's one of the areas that we're looking at. The other area, members, that tends to be a challenge also for the future is the evidence of actual reduction in our grants. For example, the grant that we're supposed to have, it was reduced by around 60 million. And it actually put pressure on the amount of money that is required to run the operation. Members, I will actually hand over to our CFO to talk about the financials.
I think as you can see, the numbers do tell the story. If you look firstly at the first column in terms of the year 2010-11 financial year,
That's on page 11, slide number 21.
In that financial year, we made an operational surplus of 17 million. If you look at the OPEX grant, it was 137 million. But the next year, which is the year now we're discussing, 2011-12, the OPEX grant, it went down to 126 million. And I'm glad that our colleagues from the department are here. That's the cut we're talking about of 15 million in the organization. It has affected us in a way, but we have managed as an organization to save where we can and cut costs where possible. If you look, for instance, at administrative expenses, we've actually reduced that significantly. In 2010-11, it was 10 million, and then for the forecast for this financial year, we'll be at 6 million, and then for the budget for 2012-13, we'll be pushing it up slightly to 7 million. Overall, for the forecast in this financial year, 11-12, we are forecasting a surplus of 1.7 million as an organization from operational activities. The 3.6 million below that, which is the fair value gain, it relates to the Waterkloof land in terms of how we treat it. We were anticipating that the value of the land would go up again in the Waterkloof. But from early indications now, as you remember, this forecast is before the financial statements have been submitted to the Auditor General. From the indication, the value of that land is remaining the same as last year, so we will not have that gain. So we will sit at an operational surplus of 1.7 million. So the budget then, because we are taking 3A entity, we budget to break even. For 2012-13, we are budgeting to break even. The OPEX grant, I think the department and National Treasury have been generous. They've increased it despite the decrease last year. However, if you look at the base where we're moving from, in 2010-11, we're sitting at 137. It went down to 126. Now we're at 133. So we have moved slightly backwards. We would have liked to be increasing from 137, but we understand that for government as well, it's tough times, and we appreciate the little that we are getting. And we will have discussions going forward in terms of our programs and the value we provide to the economy and how we can maybe try to tap more funds to be able to drive the programs that we want to do. We've also received some money for the early warning system that we are driving as an organization. And given the issues that you've had in KwaZulu-Natal and all the other areas, we appreciate and we'll use it accordingly. Overall, for our revenue, it's going to go up from 230 million to 243 million. You will notice that with the aviation income, as our CEO had highlighted, we were sitting in 2067 at around 46 million. We are now at 80 million. We have matured. We needed to drive up those aviation income because it was not recovered appropriately before. But now that it's at this level, it's reached a maturity level. So now it should be almost flat, and any increases you should have should be inflationary. Hence, we expect to make about 79 million from aviation in the next financial year. We really want to drive up our other commercial revenue. As you can see, for this financial year, we forecasted to make 15.8 million in the year 2011-12. However, for 2012-13, we want to increase it by 21% to 19.2 million. That is a tall order, and a lot of work has to go in being able to make that possible. However, we think with the resources that we've been getting and being able to capacitate our commercial units, some of those things we'll be able to do. And I think with the help as well of the portfolio committee, because I know in your communities and in the various positions that you hold, you do have some influence in terms of making people aware of the impact of weather and how they can use it for planning. So as we come here as well to report, we're also looking at you as partners that can assist us to drive our program together so that we can survive. And then our other income, which is about 6 million. The other income, which is going down from 7.8, it includes interest income and all those things. sorry about that. The main reason is actually going down our other income on the interest. Our anticipation is that on the interest, we have been holding some cash in terms of the programs we've been driving, our capital expenditure. So some of the programs where you find that it's committed, but however, the funds have not been used. We have then been able to save that money as interest to even generate further cash for the organization. But for the next financial year, we expect to have moved some of those investment projects. Hence, we expect a lower interest. from an expenditure side, and obviously being a break-even organization, there will be a balance between what we have as revenue and expenses. From an expenditure side, I've already talked about administrative expenses. We try to keep those modest, and where is tough times, that's always the first line where we try to save. And then at the next level, our operational expenses, as you know, with that 15 million cut, we had to shelve some of the projects that we wanted to do, and we delayed them, but we can't delay them forever. Hence, we moved them, and then there's a higher increase in operational expenses of about 14% to 81. The 5 million is just matching the one that's coming through the income, which is specifically funded to target the early warning. Hence, we've reported it separately for this purpose. Our depreciation is then at 18 million, and you must remember that depreciation is not actually a cash item in terms of what we spend now, but it's money we're putting aside for the future, because our assets, we have to, they are quite expensive, and we have to replace them at some point. So that's about 18 million. Our employee costs, as you can see, we have not finalized the financial statements. We have forecasted that our employee costs will be at 134 million, and that's really because of the hiring of the staff that has been happening. So for the budget for 2012-13, we expect modestly to be sitting at about 131 million, especially now that in the employee cost, a portion of it was to service the post-retirement medical aid liability. And because we have serviced it now, we think we can actually reduce the employee cost by 2% for the next financial year. And I think, members, this is our budget that we want to present to you to show how we're going to spend our money responsibly in this next financial year, which has started in any event. Whilst we're still busy with the audit. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. That presentation is our strategic plan for the coming year in the budget.
Thanks, madam. Thank you very much. This was a very, 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 very excellent presentation. If it wasn't for this issue of small letters, we were really going to give you a round of applause.
Yes.
But all in all, it was very good. We thank you for this. I'll then open for members to ask for clarity, questions, comments. Skosi and Mounzi and Morgan, in that order.
Chairperson, thank you very much. This is a good presentation indeed. That's a slight problem of the little letters that we saw on the slide. Chairperson, I'm on the communication part of it. In terms of early warning, for disaster in the rural area. I just want to check with the department that are we winning in that spot or not? If we are winning, how are we winning? Because we find the IT is very scarce in those rural areas. But it's good that you have highlighted that you deleted some schools in your program. But let the rural areas not be Eastern Cape and KZN, always you are mentioned. The rural areas is within the country. When you talk about the rural areas, I want you to tell me about Inoken, Tamohale, talk about Mokopane, Limpopo, and Siabu, such areas. They must get this information. I just want to check with your program. Do you have a program for such areas? Person must visit those areas again. And the retention, the attraction and retention of skilled personnel, I want you to push a bit on that. Your attraction, how do you attract the new skilled people, and also how do you retain the staff that exists within the department? Very important. And also a reduction of greenhouse gas emissions in relation to climate change and improved air atmospheric quality. I just want to check your measurement. How do you measure that? because what is needed is the results of what you are doing. Anything that you are doing, it must bear good results. How do you measure it? And are we succeeding in dealing with that or not? And your bursaries, the advertisement of your bursaries, really is quite important. You must just state, especially to reach those rural areas outside there, because the shortage of skills mostly is in the rural areas. Thank you very much, Chef, for holding me this time.
Thanks, Mount B.
Chairperson, I would like to thank my dear daughter for the presentation. It was full of life. You have said it.
Yes.
Well, I'm happy to know that the organization is doing something to cover the issue of not having enough scientists. Because as far as I know, this organization needs people who are at least maths and science. That's how it goes. That's how it works. And one other thing which excites me most is that we have embarked on working with schools, universities, because those are the people who matter most in your organization. And I wish you well that you succeed on that. And I heard that you are now having quite a number of trainings. And I wonder if I heard you well when you spoke about training of pilots. But maybe you can just elaborate just a bit on that one. And the information given to aviation, I would like to thank you for that, because that's where our safety lies. But though I'll always go back and say I'm not very happy about the people who are owning their crafts. What? Because now and again there's wreckage. Now and again, and I'm worrying. I always think of you each time I read from the paper, I listen to Morning Life and the rest about those people. Maybe it is not just as easy for you to reach them. One time I requested that let's get the indigenous book from the organization. I understand the book is there. But now... If I'm not mistaken, the book is there. But it was never introduced to the committee. I've never seen it, maybe. And I would like to know, where do I get that book from? Where is it sold?
They must give it to us.
Yeah, that is what I'm saying, Chairperson, because now it's just a hidden matter, because the book should have been submitted to the chair. If it's safe. Maybe it is not, I'm afraid. So, safe of life and property. I don't just get that one. I'm interested to know what is the organization helping on that score. Lastly, Chairperson, what excites me most is that the organization is communicating, is working hand in hand with the Deputy Minister, in that now you are visiting, you know, different municipalities whereby you are trying by all means to educate the communities, our people, to know, to take interest, you know, in weather, how to read the weather forecast, because our people don't. They can rather go for music, jazz, and whatever. They tell us about, you know, weather forecast. And yet, some of us, it's very important. It is very, very important in life. And more especially the ladies, you know, they would always like to see, how is the weather today? How am I going to prepare for myself to look smart? You know, it does help us, even our men. Yeah, because you plan, I'm going to wear this jeans. All of a sudden you say, no way. It's going to be 25 tomorrow. Ah, it's fine. Then I'm going to look smart. Well, fuck. If our people can take interest, just when after news, they must look at Mnigelin Ndabambi reading, giving it to us, and who is that the other one? No. Yes, Koshola, and the rest. So far, so good, Chairperson. Thank you for now.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the presentation. Thank you for the presentation. A couple of questions. The first one is in sort of the recent months and in the period going forward, I'd like to get an indication of your numbers of upper air soundings and whether there is a commitment to... whether there's any trends to decrease the number of upper air soundings. So if you could give me some feedback on... Okay, the next question...
Oh, laptop.
Yes, laptop, okay. The next question is, could you brief this committee on your renegotiation of the contract with Future Foresight? There has been a renegotiation. The initial contract wasn't in your favor with regards to the website, and I understand that there is now a set termination date for next in the first quarter next year sometime. Why was there a need to renegotiate that particular contract, and what, if any, is the update on that issue since the renegotiation? Then with regards to the issues of historical data before commercialization, and I understand you often say, well, we really just charge for administration fee. And I take the point that when people obviously are going to use it for commercial gain, you know, your argument is there should be a fee-paying arrangement. But is this something that you are engaging with regards to not charging for data captured prior to commercialization? I'd like... a response on that. And then you've argued that you're aiming for a 20 excess of 20% increase in commercial revenue, not presumably other than aviation, in the period going forward.
Good.
I'm glad. Where do you is to what combination, to what extent could that be, but you haven't said specifically, to what extent could that be you hiking prices versus getting new clients that bring in new business? So I'm very interested in what makes you so confident that you can get it, and of course I'm very happy to know that you are aiming for that. Those are my questions for the moment, Chair. Thank you very much.
Charlie?
Thank you, Chairperson. I also like to thank you for your presentation. But my concern is your early warning system, because your budget is just five million rain. I like to get more detail for, because this early warning system is quite important for your weather service, including for all the country, cover all the country. Just 5 million rain. I want to know how do you did for the little 5 million rain, and what is the warning system get from? You get it from local, get it from overseas. So this one I'd like to know. Also, from your employee cost, because your 2012 and 13 and 2011-12, your employees increased, I think it's 79 employees since 2010 and 2011. If from your presentation inside, I can see you from the 360 to 379, you just increased the 19 staff. You told you increased for the other financial year, just increase for the 19 staff. So my question is, from the year 2009-2010, you increased for 10% up to the 2010-11, to the 2012. Then coming to the 2012 to 2013, you will be less 2% for employee cost. I'd like to know what reason you can reduce the 2%, saving the 2% for your employee cost. And your employee staff is more 19 staff. Because this one is salary will be every year is increased. How do you can save in this 2% from your total cost? I think this is all my question. Thank you.
Thanks, Charlie. Mrs. Swainer?
Thank you, Chair. During the presentation, we were told under the bursaries that a lot of it is for HR and finance-related studies. Is there a reason why you're not concentrating more on the development of weather scientists and you're concentrating on HR and finance, and which is not your core competency? Thanks.
Thank you. Charlie?
Sorry, regarding your aviation income, this aviation income,
every year your income is all increased, but the 2012-13 you will come down. It's less than 2%. I want to know what reason for income is from the aviation income must be increased. Why you come down the 2% then?
And that's it.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to get clarity. I understand that there are some universities that they are working with in terms of the skills that we are needing so much in the department. I just want to know, after they have completed, how many percentage are you able to absorb or attract to your department? Or do you have another companies that are competing with you in terms of the skills that you are producing? Thank you.
Thanks, Alzheim. And also to add on her question, can you also briefly outline your selection criteria as far as bazaaris and internship are concerned? And also, how do you make sure that you cover all the provinces? Thank you. Yes, madam.
Thank you very much, I will distribute the questions as follows. I think, Nikelu, you look at the early warning system and also our activities with the rural community. Maybe talk more about the campaign that we're having and how we have planned moving forward and how we have identified the different vulnerable communities that we are targeting. The attraction and retention, I'll look at it with the support from Dr. Winfred. The greenhouse gases, I think it's the air quality and the Gulf Station, just to clarify our role, Nigeli. And the bazaars, I'll take that one. The science with schools, training of pilots, ma'am, Winfred, may please take that one. The information on aviation safety. I think the issue of safety of life and property, we'll do it together, Mr. Ndabambi. The indigenous knowledge, the book, we will also do the necessary follow-up, because I remember when we came to present some time back, the books were supposed to be sent to the members. We were supposed to provide you with a book, the 150-year celebration, and the indigenous knowledge book. But I will go back, check with the office, and check the administration how far it has gone. But if members have not received, those who have not received the book, we are willing to send the books to you again.
Okay.
And then the upper air sounding, Nikeli, CFO, you will brief on the WIS contract and the issue of the historical data. Nikeli will look at that. The employee cost, I will also look at it. So you look at aviation as well. Coming to the university and the employment and the other companies, I will take the skills and the bursaries. Starting with the other question was around why the emphasis on HR and finance. I will also address that question. Maybe starting with that one. One of the key issues within the organization when we are developing our strategy, during the first phase of the weather service coming into ready operation, around 2005, 2006, we had challenges in terms of having enough financials to ensure the day-to-day operational running of the organization. It was then important for us to actually look at changing the culture and making sure that whether the funds are coming from government, whether it's coming from commercial, we need to put emphasis on that as a science-based organization. Coming to HR, the activities and the work that we do, it's around building the necessary skill and competence in this field for the weather service. And over the years, over the last 40-something years, the University of Pretoria have been working with the Weather Service in training meteorologists. So we are continuing with that work. And for example, I've indicated members that we are looking at having bursaries of around 40 per year, the minimum. And those bursaries are for BSc in meteorology, atmospheric science, and looking at also having the technician in the field. All of them, when they pass from university, they join the organization. We employ them. So we are actually building our own pool that is required. In terms of looking at that's the reason, the emphasis. It's not the emphasis on the other areas. But we also feel it's very important for the sustainability and long-term sustainability of the organization that we build a pool of leadership that will take the organization forward. So there are funds that are spent in developing management, scientists to become also managers, because sometimes it becomes a challenge for the sustainability of the organization. That's what we're looking at. The question around bursaries, when the program started, it was indeed focusing and people were around Gauteng because of the virtue of having the head office in that area.
So the way that you are doing it, number one, the criteria is that two-thirds of the bursary holders are from the previously disadvantaged. The second one is that more than 50% of them, we're targeting women, because we also need to have women in this field. Number three, it has to be distributed throughout South Africa. So additional to the work that we do, before around September, October, we also have advertisements in newspapers, national newspapers as well, also on radio around the bursaries. And what we're also doing, because on a yearly basis, we go to the Grahamstown Science Festival. And the organization has actually won a number of awards there, where we get a lot of students that are doing science that come in for some workshops. We organize workshops. We also use that as a platform to do that. And this year, now that we also have the program that we've agreed with the Deputy Minister to actually target especially those communities that we know that by virtue of their location, they always have severe weather events. That's how we're targeting. We also have somebody coming from the training to also talk about the bursary. So we're trying to spread throughout. And additional with the bursary, that's why some of the people will take them to University of Zululand and throughout. But members, one of the challenges that we are faced with when it comes to these bursaries is to get pupils that have got maths and science. That has been a serious challenge that we have. Moving to the other question of the employee cost, that if we look at the, may I go to that slide? Okay. The employee cost, if you look at the employee cost from, we had a program that was approved by the board in 2008, ending, that was going to take a 5-year period. With that program, we had one attraction and retention strategic initiative, where we identify experts within the organization. And then they had a number of understudies that they actually trained. That program took around a 2-year period. And we continued with the program to ensure that we build that skill. So that program is actually now come to an end, where the experts were given a retention amount to actually train those individuals. So if you look at our costs, because of that initiative, now it's actually a little bit outside. That's one area. The other area, in areas where there is, it's not core business for the organization, because our target is that we want to have our employee costs between 55 and 59. So we need to start looking at prudently. We say in one department, we had maybe 15 or 4 or 5 technicians, and some of them retire. We go back and revisit and say, do we still need 4 or 5 technicians, or do we need 2 degree individuals at a strategic higher level? Then we start combining those positions so that we keep within. That's why when you look at the staff cost, it's going down a little bit. Because if it keeps on going up, it's going to go over 59. But you are doing it in a manner that will actually benefit the organization. So there are some of the positions where we say we've got too many observers, but we need forecasters. Instead of having 5 observers, you need 2 forecasters. So that is the analysis that we are doing around that. The aviation, Nigel will actually respond to that one. Then the other one, before I give over to the CFO,
it's around the commercialization. You see, when we started looking specifically at commercialization, I've indicated that in the beginning, in 2006, we had around 7 million rand income. Now we're at 15 million. We have done some analysis of the market itself, looking at different areas. For example, mining industry. It's a market that we are growing, which has not been tapped. Looking at construction industry as well. So to answer the question, it's not the price. It's more of expanding and getting more clients. So it's not because one of the challenges that we have in terms of the price, it's difficult for us to use the strategy of increasing prices because in some areas we've got a lot of competitors. For example, U.S. companies, they get the U.S. mail services is paid by government 100% for everything. So they provide every information free of charge. And U.S. companies have access to the South African market. So we've got competition. So it's not easy to just increase prices. So we are competing. But the market, there are areas where within the market we can go in, which we have not in the past paid a significant role. But Lucy maybe may also give some detail around that. The issue of the upper air sounding, I think Nicole, maybe you may start with the technical issues and then Slims will come with the financial. Thanks.
Thank you, honorable members, and thank you, CEO. I'll start from the beginning so that I don't skip the areas that I need to talk to. I think the first one that I need to talk to is the one around the aviation. Honorable member, you are worried about the accidents. I think it's in terms of the small aircraft. Yeah, that, because that's where we get the accidents. Although they are not always related to weather, it's a couple of them that are related to weather. With the general aviation, in terms of communication, there has been a challenge that once they get used to flying, they would say, I know the area, I'll go and fly around the mountains, for example. With those that are visual flying aircraft, there are certain levels that if the cloud, they drop a certain level, that is more or less equivalent of below the mountains, for example. So the visual flying is not allowed. So us as meteorologists, we could only recommend that there is no visual flying in this area today, but they make the decision. Again, refer where I've got facts, the Limpopo incident. They were informed that visual flying is not recommended. And then as they were following each other, they hit the mountains because they thought they know the area they can fly around. So I think that is the area that is unnecessarily exposing the risk to the visual flying general aviation pilots. Unfortunately, they are also exposing a risk to the other people. But there are also technical aircraft-related challenges, that I might not be able to talk to. Honourable Member, the request for indigenous knowledge, I do remember it. CEO, my name was mentioned specifically. I will investigate because in my memory it was sent, but I will investigate and just make sure the members are getting it within a week. If it didn't happen, that I will commit to follow it up because I know the CEO did make a decision into that effect that they be sent here. And then the safety of life and property. What is the organization doing? We issue the early warnings for safety of life and property. We mostly use the media, but our priority are disaster management authorities. So if we see there is a potential, but the people don't need to moment. So we'll give through SMS to the disaster management authorities so they plan, and then they can ask for a question for clarity to assess the state of readiness. And then once the confidence level is high, then we start to issue through the media as well, and we do the broadcast, and then sometimes they broadcast on our behalf. Unfortunately, sometimes we are misrepresented, hence our plan involves training of the DJs and all the weather presenters. But we started the weather presenters already during 2010. And then what we also do, we participate what we call the joint operational centers nationally and provincially. I can just give the example when we had a tropical cyclone Irina in KZN. The collaboration was quite good with the disaster management authorities at KZN. You might think that the tropical cyclone didn't have a severe or significant impact, but I think it was because of the proactiveness. Actually, we're supposed to have seen more people that could have passed away during that system. But even then, during that same system, tropical cyclone Irina, when I compare the collaboration we had with Mpumalanga, because there was a threat there, but fortunately, the tropical cyclone didn't hit hard in those areas that are in the Far East, which are very low and they've got muddy houses. But we requested them to proactively to be there and deal with the people and take people to stronger structures. But it was not as good as in KZN. So we've got areas where we've got good disaster management activities. Like I think KZN is improving. And then another strong one is this province, Southwestern Cape. But we do have a disaster management plan nationally, provincially. And then in part of our roadshows with the Deputy Minister, we are now enhancing disaster management plans at local level. So that's how we contribute in terms of safety of life and property. But I'm still going to unpack the dealing with the disaster with the Deputy Minister as it was asked. And then, Honourable Member, the upper air. I wanted to quickly look for data, but the computer is also promoting the noise as well. But I can provide you with the actual numbers. But what I would like to share with you, I think you are aware that we did cut down in the number of ascent, as well practicing the realignment and also trying to adjust to be able to survive with the cost that we have. But as we were doing that, we're also mindful of the fact that the sources of the upper air data have increased due to the advancement in terms of technology and others. So we also got the data from the aircraft that we use to supplement the upper air data. As we speak now, we are again increasing the number of upper air soundings because with the impact of climate change, we have seen and it has been discussed internationally that there's a need to increase the data as much as possible. For example, Port Elizabeth now will be increasing soon the number of upper air data before the next season. And then we're also going to use the SAR GLASS II because we know the scarcity of data over the ocean. So we'll be also sending upper air soundings. But our plan moving forward is to increase the upper air data. Okay, and then the next one, the data that we had the prior July 2001 when we became an entity, when we were given the commercial mandate, are we considering to give it for free? Remember, Honorable Member, when we give the data, we recover the cost or it's part of the public good as per Schedule 2. We cannot say now the data that we acquired it before we became an entity is going to be given for free because it's not the we won't be servicing the mandate because we're still processing that data. We are maintaining that data. Remember, if we just give raw data, it could be very easy. But and then if we give process data, even for the research students that we give data for free, sometimes they just ask data, 10 years data, only to find out the project only requires 10 years data. So if we would give like that, it would mean we need to employ more personnel. So the historic data, we are actually also charging for it. But for the university students that are doing data for the research, we give them for free. Actually, we do have a demonstration, you know, where you see they are the most that are receiving data for free as a public good. No admin cost. Then the admin cost is the research data that is going to be used for research purposes, but there is an economic benefit or gain. For example, some of the people that have been complaining are consultants that are appointed by the government. They are the consultants, they are given tasks to perform. And then when they come to acquire data from us, they expect to get data for free, and they say they are government, but they are consultant. Mm-hmm. So then the part of consulting has to be the total costing of the consultation, including acquiring the data, because that data needs to be processed first before they are given. And the same applies with the institutions. The funds are allocated with the research. You know, so it has to be the total package of the research. You don't want to see the other parties being funded, the other one, somebody is expected to give it for free. So, but I think also in our part, we need to engage and forge partnership so that there is a more understanding. Because we would like to promote research. We can only be improved as among being among the best methodological services through research, through application. Some of the applications performed by private sector. So in the USA, there's quite a good relationship between the National Methodical Center and the private sector. So we have just signed the MOU with NOAA, and one of the areas we want them to assist us in terms of facilitating that relationship and also to learn how they educate their nation, because they are also in a big drive to educate their nation. So we need to educate each other to talk to each other. And then in terms of the early warning system, 5 million rand, Honorable Member. That is what I was talking about, Honorable Member, when I say university students that want data, historic data for research purposes. Actually, it's more of them that acquire data than any other. And then you can see that as you look at others, it's decreasing. And then the next slide you will show, just go back once. You see that your other research service fee. If I'm looking there from my right-hand side, they are the 10. You know, you can see it's a few of them that require the data. But maybe the other contributing factor is the fact that they believe they shouldn't pay. That's why we need to engage, because we would like to promote research. And then, when I remember the 5 million rand, that is the money we requested from Treasury to the MTF during the 2010-2011 financial year. But then it just came towards the end of last year. Then we said we use it for the early warning, but we are planning to use that money to enhance the education of the users, the awareness, the people to understand the early warning system. Because in October 2010, we've just introduced the alert categories, where you've got advisory, you've got your watch, you've got your warning, and then with allocated colors, which are supposed to assist even the people that who cannot read. But those people, they need to be educated as to what those colors mean before they can be able to use them. So that 5 million is basically just to assist in that awareness program, and also in our automatic rainfall stations, because in 2010 October we developed a South African flash flood guidance system for the first time. So a portion of it is to enhance that. So it's not the total budget towards early warning system. Actually, our approach now, the strategy that we're using for the education is to partner. We've spoken to the Department of Rural Development. They came aboard to assist. They are more interested in rural areas. You know, if you want to translate material for rural areas, so they are willing to assist. And there are other departments as well. And then the other question was, how did we identify areas that we are going to have road shows? You know, if you notice, we started in Duduze, and then we went to Mfuleni in the Val, and then we went to KZN, but in KZN we could not take off because of the local logistics, you know. Why is it not there, but there? So we still need to sort out those. We have used, we've got now historic information for lightning. So we know what are the lightning risk areas in the country. But then, we, for example, Gauteng is red in terms of lightning risk. And then you've got the most areas in our KZN and the Eastern Cape, which are known to be lightning to be causing death, yellow, which is less risk than Gauteng. But again, we take into account the structures, because in Gauteng there are stronger structures, but in rural areas there are weak structures. And then we said we'll prioritize using the recent weather events that were fatal. Remember now we're closing the financial year, and then we took the budget from somewhere to elevate this when we got a positive response from the deputy minister. So then in Duduza, they were hit by the tornado. I think people still can remember. And then there was a serious destruction. And then if you look at Mfuleni, they were hit by floods when the Val Dam had to be opened. And then it also caused a problem in the Orange River around Upington because the Orange River flooded. But locally there, they had big problems. We've used that. And then KZN, we've got lightning instances last year where one family in Bergville, five people from the same family passed away due to one lightning strike, and then some actually next to Etegwini. So that means now in Duduza, we emphasize the tornado in terms of severe thunderstorms. And then in Mfuleni, we emphasize the flooding. And then in KZN, we emphasize the lightning. And the honorable member, we are going to all the areas. Believe me, we just started with those areas. I think the next area now is in Limpopo. I'm correct. So the rural areas are not only the Eastern Cape and KZN. We are going to all the areas, honorable member. I think that's what I tried to cover.
Okay, I think as you can see that, one of the questions although it will need some time, I think we also said one of the things that we need to do over the period is to develop applications that are going to be useful for the communities. And for the first time, the Weather Service, we've actually patented a product that can be useful to the rural communities. A community rainfall station that where you actually, as communities, you identify leaders. If you are staying close to the rivers, you identify community leaders that will assist the disaster management to monitor the rainfall in those areas. The community agree with the leader, with the disaster management, to say at this level, the risk is that this is what you need to do. At this level, this is only what you need to do. The nice thing about it, what we've come up with, is that you can connect it to a cell phone. But now what the issue is that is to start getting some funding to ensure that it's implemented at the rural areas. We will start looking at having a pilot project for that and see how it works. Because every second person has got a cell phone. And I think it's one of the areas that we said flooding has been a problem in a number of areas. Let's come up with a tool to do that. So it's some of the tools that we are coming up with. Looking at also the other thing when it comes to severe weather events or using our resources effectively. The other project that we have with the rural communities is water harvesting project. We are working together with the University of Pretoria. We have managed last year to get some funds from the Water Research Commission, around 2.4 million rand. That money, the University of Pretoria, over the years, they've done research where they've identified areas that have got a lot of fog throughout the year, where you can harvest water from that. So that project we're doing is the first pilot. We're doing it with Limpopo in Venda. So we now, with the 2 million, we need to be looking at other areas throughout South Africa and having a number of pilot projects. So those are some of the activities that we are actually busy with. I think let me give to Winfred maybe to start talking about the training of pilots, because we have started that program. For example, now we have been training okay, maybe let me give it to you.
Thank you, Honorable Mimas. When we talk about training of pilots, it's a bit bigger than just pilots. It is actually more of aviation personnel. And the training and the competencies of aviation personnel have been tightened in the past few years because ICAO, the International Civil Aviation Authority, had discussions with the World Met Organization, and they felt that we're not strict enough on the competencies, as it were, and they instituted what they call the competencies for aviation personnel. Now that includes for us is the forecasters and of course the weather technicians for weather observers as well, and that is a bit wider than that. Now if you look at what weather information is given out, and especially to the aviation, they must now comply to the competencies that have been brought to the attention of not only of our personnel, and we've updated our training to include all that. It has also been brought under the attention of the South African Air Force, and we were involved in the training previously, and then it lapsed, and now we're involved in the training of their personnel again. We have the first course of their training of their personnel in the beginning of this year. When they walk out, they have a full portfolio of evidence to prove that they are competent, but the competencies work like this: you are competent now, and you have to prove your competencies within a few years, and it needs to be updated. That was brought under their attention, and they are fully aware of it. We are in discussions with the South African Air Force to actually go through and train more of their personnel, and we're also in discussions with ATNS and ICT, because they also fall into that category. On the pilot training, you get the two pilot trainings, you get the commercial pilot trainings. We are not involved in that because that is a training that's done by the commercial people themselves, and the private pilot training. There is a unit standard understanding metrology for aviation, and we're looking into to actually register for that unit standard so that we can give that unit standard. We also would target the that's what they call the private pilot, the private pilot training schools, so that we actually give that training for the private training schools. How far that will go, it depends on the human capacity, what is available in the resource itself. But that is what we are doing on it. But I can believe me, the training for aviation personnel is now highlighted very nicely.
Maybe Nikeli, one of the questions is emission reduction. How are we actually measuring it? And maybe just to clarify our involvement, because from our side, it's mostly providing the necessary information for the country to prove that indeed we are reducing the emission, because we provide the information.
Thank you, CEO. In terms of reduction of greenhouse gases emission regarding to climate change, and then also how do we measure it? Through our global atmospheric watch station, that is at Cape Point, we monitor the greenhouse gases. We can actually confirm that they are increasing at the moment. So we send every quarter reports to the World Data Center, and it is captured. We are one of 28 global atmospheric watch in the world. This is a very important station. So then that means our contribution is, now that the South African government has taken some measures, are there some reduction in those greenhouse gases over our area? Then through that program, we can then confirm, which is recognized internationally. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, the other question that I think I have not addressed is the question around attraction and retention, the how part, how we are doing it. When we came with the RNG strategy, we actually started we felt it was important for us to actually pay attention on these key skills, research and development within the organization, looking at forecasters, looking at climate services, looking at the technical services and the engineer that will assist us in making sure that we are in a position to maintain our infrastructure. And we said in the next 5 years, that's the area that we're going to be looking at. Attraction in some way, there was benchmarking exercise that was done to actually compare, looking at how weather service compared to the other science-based institution are actually paying. So we had a policy on attraction, reward and remuneration of our employees as one policy. There's an issue of basic salary, but one of the key things that we've realized that to retain scientists, you actually need to recognize the work that they do and then provide them with the tools to do the work. And we also have a reward and recognition awards on a yearly basis, which the board is spearheading. So that was one of the things that the researchers and scientists within the organization, they felt it was, they felt that they also appreciated. The other program that I think it has worked very well for us is the incentive program that we have for the scarce skills, where we've identified experts within the organization and saying for a certain period you train people, but we recognize we will get recognition in terms of also getting an additional amount of money for training those people over a period, but there should be a portfolio of evidence. So we're actually now busy with that assessment. I've got a preliminary report that is coming from the assessment because the 2-year period has ended. And interestingly and surprising enough, the scientists are saying we want to continue with the program. In fact, we don't want to be paid for it. So if the challenge will be financials, we are willing to continue having understudies, which is also a good thing. The other issue around attraction is because most of the people we train them, the guys at the bazaaries, they get employed with by the organization. But one of the challenges that we have, 3 or 4 years down the line, the private sector is actually attracting them with better salaries. So we're starting to become a training ground. Sometimes it's not a bad thing because we get a lot of ambassadors outside that are very trained because it's also good for the country. So those are some of the issues that we have. The retention as well is to also look at the salaries. For example, the board has just done another benchmarking exercise and survey to check how are we doing compared to our potential competitors in terms of paying for our scientists. Indeed, it shows that we are a little bit below, lagging behind from our competitors. And the board is saying, in the next coming year, 3 years, come up with a plan on how to address that. So it's a continuum. That's how we're dealing with attraction and retention.
Thank you, Phil. Honorable members and honorable chair, I think also maybe wearing a... I think wearing my other hat just as a citizen of South Africa, I'm proud that the portfolio committee is exercising its oversight role. Looking at the questions that you see, they go beyond the presentations that we've submitted here. So it does mean that you did spend time to bond with our information over the last year. The question that was asked in terms of the contract with Wiz that we had that's coming to an end last year and why it was changed from the original contract. We, in developing our commercial wing, we actually form partnerships with key organizations that can assist us. Currently, we've got many partnerships with MTN, Vodacom, Afrigis, we had one with Teleshore in insurance, and also with Wiz. I can say sitting here that out of all the partnerships, the one with Wiz has been the one that has bared more fruit. But it's also been a learning curve for us. When we had the first contract with Wiz, we had linked to the contract a service level agreement, whereby in terms of the service level agreement, we had committed at the time to ambitious targets, which would have been linked to our infrastructure plans as well, where we could not have had funding at some point to deliver at a certain level. What we found as it continued is that we could not produce at the level we had promised based on the SLA. But also, coming together with the party which was with, we then came to an agreement that based on these targets not being achieved, and they would have promised on the back of those targets clients, it was in everyone's interest to actually reduce those ambitious targets so that you could have realistic targets with the clients that you had there. Based on those SLA, there were penalty clauses whereby if we did not meet those targets, the contract with Wiz would then extend. So each time we did not meet a target, the contract was extending. And we felt that the contract would then extend indefinitely, and then we would know what exactly we're doing with them. So we said to keep the contract, let's renegotiate the SLAs, but not change the substance of the contract itself. We then consulted with the legal division, which was also consulted with outside lawyers who would deal with commercial issues. They advised that we could actually put an addendum.
If you can wrap up, please.
Okay. Essentially, what we have done now, anyway, we have then kept that contract. That contract is no longer extending indefinitely. We have reduced the target to a reasonable level, and then we've shifted the penalties to financial perspective. So if we don't meet certain targets, there would be a financial penalty imposed on SOLS, rather than having a contract that would go on for years beyond even our lifespans within the organization being SOLS. Yeah. I can explain more even outside.
Thank you very much. We were supposed to finish these discussions with you by 11 o'clock, and it's now 11:30. And I'm afraid we have to take Sandy, as now Skosana here want to ask the question, and really I am not someone who likes to suppress people. So I'd request him to be very brief, and also in your response you must also be very brief. Please.
Professor, thank you very much. It's just a follow-up question. Our questions are properly responded to. Professor, as you are talking about the recruitment, we've got people who are inside the system at school level doing matric, and we've got people who are out of the system who are dealing, who are at tertiary, at FET level doing diplomas, and also they are dealing with IT, HR, and finances. I just want to check, especially with those who are outside the system, how to deal with them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. With those ones that are outside the system, because we also work with universities, specifically for forecasting and all that, they are taken within the organization. But for IT and HR, it's on basis where the resources actually it is required. Because if you look at HR and IT and other supports, you have limited positions. So when there is a new position, we follow the new normal due processes of attracting, advertising, and then looking at our equity as well, which is important. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Maguleni and the team. This was really a very fruitful discussion. We really value the work that you are doing and keep it up. Thanks and good luck. Sandy? Who's leading the delegation?
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members. I know that my colleagues from stores need to leave, and I thought maybe they could leave without disturbing us.
No. It's not for you to do. It's not for you to do that.
I'm so sorry.
You are not in charge of this meeting.
I'm sorry, Honourable Chair, but I do know that my colleagues.
Yeah, you may do so quietly, please.
I know that there's a constraint of time. Shall I proceed, Honourable Chair?
Start by introducing our team.
Okay. Thank you very much. We're very pleased to have Mr. Tami Sokoto, who is the chair of our board, here with us and who will be part of the presentation. Also to introduce to you to Tom Bauer, who is our new chief financial officer, sitting next to me. Also in the team is Ms. Mbizo, who will assist us in picking the presentation, and she is head of research, knowledge, and networking, and basically head of all our content side of our work. We're also pleased to have Professor Donaldson here.
Chair, can let some be all sit in this side? Yeah.
Are we sitting in the dark?
It's all empty. Yeah. Easy with the public facing the face. Okay.
Is that a quick?
Including me.
Yes.
That a quick, please.
Chair?
Yes, ma'am.
Honourable Chair, again, Mr. Sokoto, Tami Sokoto, the chair of the board, sitting next to me, his hand up. With Tom Bauer, who is the chief finance officer. We've got Kamal Mbizo, who is the head of research and knowledge, and basically responsible for all the content side of Sandy's work. Then we've got Professor Donaldson here, famous for the fact that he heads up the scientific authority of Sambi, of the country of which Sambi hosts. And we have Moiketsi Kwakli, who is the head of corporate, and also Alan Smith, the finance manager. And I am Tanya Abramser, the CEO of Sambi. And the three of us will make a quick presentation. We asked our chair of our board to make a few comments at the beginning of our presentation. And then we will proceed with the rest, including the financial information.
Yeah, comments must be very brief. You don't read the document, you talk to it.
Okay.
Honorable Chairman, members of the committee, I'm very happy to be here. It's a privilege and honor. I just want to give a brief overview of Sambi and the kind of challenges that we've seen in the period that we've been in the board. Go to the next slide, please. Basically, as you know, Sambi has moved from being a national biodiversity institute to being a South African National Biodiversity Institute, which means it moved from focusing on just flora, but also to incorporate the flora side of the biodiversity of our country. And that has come with its own challenges over the years, because it means that with the broadened mandate, the skill set of Sambi had to be expanded to include the fauna side of things. Now, naturally, it's been National Botanical Institute, and therefore the skill set that we've got there that has been predominantly there over the years has been that of the botanical side of stuff. We're now busy building the fauna side of the institute, and that has come with challenges which the CEO will talk to later on in our plan. also in 2004, that was the basis of establishment of Sanbi, but together with that, the minister also used his discretionary powers to further expand the mandate of Sanbi, which also gave more challenges in terms of the prioritization of what Sanbi should focus on in terms of its in terms of its mandate. So if you look at the key information about Sanbi specifically, I would like to look not in the top part of the slide, but look at that, but look at the bottom part of it. The number of staff that we have currently is approximately 650, and the reason why it is that number is because we had to go through cost-cutting exercises, which meant that people who resigned were not replaced by others, and therefore the areas that are affected by those people who left needed to be dealt with or assigned to other members of staff. Edmonton is located in 10 campuses, or the gardens are located in 10 campuses, with the new Botanical Gardens to be established or in the process of being established in 2012, which is part of the mandate of Sanbi. As you know, the head office was previously in Kirstenbosch here in Cape Town. We have since moved it to Pretoria, but we still have some of the staff members located in Kirstenbosch. I hope that members of the committee have had the opportunity to go and enjoy the sounds of jazz and other things that are coming out of Kirstenbosch, which is one of our flagship projects in Sanbi.
You haven't invited us, yes?
You have an open invitation.
Open invitation?
Yes. we'll make sure that you get it right.
There will be many questions about it.
And just say that this is the board. This is the board's second term, and specifically, I am the chairman. This is my second term, which I'm just starting now, of the Sanbi board. And during that period, specifically the first part of it, just to say that we had inherited a number of people-related challenges. You will have known, because I know that you received a lot of correspondence from various individuals in Sanbi, and some of them were fired from Sanbi. We also had issues relating to financial governance-related matters. I'm happy to report that we have since dealt very successfully and very resolutely with those issues, to the extent that now we believe that Sanbi is in a position that is well-placed to actually focus on what it's supposed to be delivering, which is to be delivering science, monitoring, and advice around biodiversity in South Africa. Other key important matter, I think, was that we have had a deficit that we experienced the last 2 years, but it's important to explain what gave rise to that deficit. That deficit was discovered by work that was done since Sanbi, because over the years, there was a lot of dependence on external funding for projects. And over time, there was blurring of funds between projects fund and MTF funds. And then when thorough analysis was done, it was found out that a lot of MTF funds were actually used to fund projects that were supposed to be supported by external funds. And when that break was made, we discovered the deficit, which we have since substantially dealt with, and we have put Sanbi on a level where now it can actually again continue with its work. The other driver of the deficit was the fact that there was an associated salary increase of up to 13.5% between 2008 and 2009, and that came with its knock-on effect going forward. We also had inherited union relations or relationships with unions that are very fraught and were very, very bad indeed, which spilled over to spoiling relationships with staff members in the business. Again, we have since proactively dealt with the staff. We are happy to say that we have very good relationships with the union and staff at the moment. I just want to highlight, lastly, a key role that is played by Sanbi in the ongoing debate of climate change. Sanbi has played a very influential role in the papers that have been produced leading up to the various international discussions that have been held, including the latest being the COP17 that was held in Durban. Not only during the run-up to it, but also in COP17, Sanbi played a very influential and very prominent role. and we hope to be able to continue playing that role going forward. Yeah, that's it. I think from now we'll get into how we talk about mandate, and the CEO will take us through the presentation.
Thank you very much, Chair and members, Honourable Chair and members. Just to remind the Portfolio Committee, where do we get our mandate from? There's the National Environmental Management Biodiversity Act, which was gazetted and therefore in law, including which the NEMBA allows for is the minister to send a letter along with that, either converting a number of maize in the NEMBA, you know, SAMBI may do this, SAMBI may do that, to SAMBI must do that. So that is important to note that NEMBA, the National Environmental Management Biodiversity Act, as well as the letter of the minister, is gazetted and legally mandated. The next area of work that is also gazetted are a number of sub-activities of NEMBA, which also drives our work around threatened and protected species and threatened and protected ecosystems. The CITES regulation is one of the key areas that we play a role in supporting the department to make good decisions around biodiversity protection. And the invasive alien species regulations also require SAMBI to do a whole array of science investigation, and that is also gazetted. The other area that is gazetted, which is the National Biodiversity Strategic Action Plan, which is a cabinet-approved government-wide strategic action plan that was produced in 2009 and in fact sets the framework for a 20-year vision for biodiversity and what's to be done in biodiversity. Out of that is a 5-year plan which is extracted from the Biodiversity Strategic Action Plan, and in it SAMBI has been given a whole range of roles to play, also is a gazetted matter. In addition to that, the other thing that drives our role is the President's outcomes program, and particularly in Outcome 10, we are mandated to deliver a number of issues. And in fact, all our programs except our corporate service and finance program has got Outcome 10 obligations. And of course, the Outcome 10, while it is not gazetted and therefore not legal, it is published and therefore an important role that SAMBI plays. And then finally, since we last met, Honourable Members, you passed the white paper on climate change response, and thank you very much for giving us yet more work to do. And if you will note in the white paper on climate change policy, there again SAMBI has a role to play. And these five areas is really where we focus on. It encompasses everything that we do. And we deliver this in 7 key performance areas, which are translated into programs in the Corporate Strategic Plan. And as you can imagine, putting your arms around such a wide mandate, and I think the Chair has mentioned one of the key challenges is around prioritization of that mandate, that legal mandate. So we have organized it into 7 areas. The first one is really a very core area around, which is very clear in our mandate, our role to do the scientific research, to provide evidence-based information for assessment and monitoring and reporting of the state of biodiversity, and reporting to the minister and the nation on that state of biodiversity on an evidence-based way, and that's a really key role that we play. Number 2 is also a mandated area is the area of providing biodiversity information, basically being the first stop for biodiversity information and collections, information on collections, plant and animal collections. So that's another key area. The third area is the work that we do around developing tools to manage biodiversity better, maps, guidelines, etc., etc. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. The minister talked about the mining guideline in a budget speech, and that's part of the work that we do there. And then, of course, an area that you often know us for is managing the National Botanical Garden System. And I took just very briefly say that under the Outcome 10 promises, we are expanding the National Botanical Garden System. And we were 9 last year. We've just become 10 with the Eastern Cape Garden. The next garden will be in Limpopo. And the way we choose those gardens is obviously first biodiversity value, but also tourism and education value, near an urban conurbation, it being for windows for urban people to see biodiversity in a different, easy way to understand. Go. Gets worse and worse. I don't know whether it gets worse and worse over time. Is that better? Okay. Maybe that will help. The fifth program is around providing advice to the Department of Environmental Affairs primarily, but we also provide advice to other departments and other levels of government, and I'll talk a little bit about that. And then within the National Biodiversity Framework in 2009, there was a recommendation and, in fact, a proposal that Sandy lead the human capital development process, and we have been starting that process, but this year, in the last year or so, with a mandate from the minister, we have been really at the forefront of leading human capital development in our sector. And finally, we have corporate services as program 7. And can you go to the next slide, please? And this is all in your handout, and I think for me it's just to indicate how we have delivered on parts of that mandate, on all of those mandates at different levels, in the monitoring and reporting on the status of biodiversity. In the year in question, we have provided a red list of plants, one of the first mega-diverse countries to provide a full red list of plants. We've assessed amphibians, spiders, butterflies, and reptiles and published them for the country. This, I think, is an indicator that we are moving into the fauna side, Chair, from only being a flora institution, and that big shift for SAMBI to develop competencies and capabilities to move into the fauna side. Increasingly, we do not do the research. We manage others to do the research against standard setting because we don't feel that it would be necessary to bulk up skills in the organization, although to have no fauna skills is a problem for a biodiversity institution. And we have recently brought in some skills around fauna taxonomy and fauna engagement in biodiversity. But we have worked very closely with the University of Cape Town, for example, University of Fort Hare, University of Stellenbosch, around harnessing the South Africa's capacities to do the research and assessment. But of course, when the thing is published, it really is, has to be published in our name because we are the organization mandated to do the assessment of these various species. The work we're doing around early detection and rapid response on invasive species has been a rapidly growing area. As you know, invasive species are becoming an increasing problem due to climate change, and our view is that it is a major impact on biodiversity and the resilience of our biodiversity assets in the country, and so we've expanded invasive species work quite enormously. The other interesting report that we produced this year was the first report on GM genetically modified maize and the impact it has on biodiversity and the environment. We developed a framework. We used a pilot study of one GM example, and my colleague Professor Donaldson will talk a little bit more about that, but that's the first in the year in question. The second area, as you know, is that we are the taxonomy and plant collections institution for the country, and we have now established herbaria and plant collections and databases and a range of plant checklists that we use as part of monitoring and assessment of the state of biodiversity. Some of the information we've got, Chair, are historical information that allows us to see biodiversity changes over
some 100 years, and that is invaluable information for tracking the impact of climate change, for example, or just general global change on our biodiversity and the species, particularly in the biodiversity. But for the public, I think the Biodiversity Advisor, which was launched this year, is a website tool, and rather ambitiously, Chair, we want to make this tool be usable by the ordinary citizen as well as the high-up scientist. And that's really our aim. And I really wish that you would go into the Biodiversity Advisor. It really is a conglomeration of a lot of the information that we produce that then gets put into a website tool that shows it in layers, right down to cadastral level, right down to ecosystem level. Species,
Madam?
Three to four
digits.
Short a bit?
Yeah,
go on? Okay.
Madam?
Shall I stop?
Yeah, some of us are not academics here. You're talking of herbaria plants, wasn't it?
Okay. Chair, Sandy has three storage facilities for samples of plants, and that's what our area is. You can have a living collection, which we also have, and the living collection is alive in the garden, and then we have a dead collection, which is in herbaria. And basically, you take plant samples, you flatten it, you describe it, you press it, you describe it, and you store it. And researchers can then come and look at it, look at the taxonomy and the classification of it.
Taxonomy, what's that?
It is the classification of plants and animals. It's the research that one needs to do to understand life on Earth. So Homo sapiens sapiens, which all of us are, taxonomy has been done on us. We are different from the apes, although very similar. And taxonomy tells us the difference between an ape and us. That's the method, the science method. So I won't share. Oh, that's kind of fine. Is that okay?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. All right. I want to just talk, this is all in the presentation and you've got a hard copy, so I won't go into details, but I think it is important to talk about the scientific authority. If we manage the scientific authority for the country on behalf of the country. It's now functioning. We produce a report formally to the minister. The scientific authority basically takes deals with our CITES, that is the species in trade, the International Species in Trade International Convention, and provides the scientific information for our country to have a position in the CITES debates and negotiations. Chair, this is not just a nice to have. You know, in the news, there have been a lot of issues around threatened species, about sustainable use, about extraction, about various things. And so we provide the scientific evidence that then the minister makes declaration. And Professor Donaldson runs and manages that system, and you can ask him questions on it if you wish. Next slide, please. These are just some pictorial illustrations of the work that we've been doing at the Biodiversity Advisor. The herbarium is the singular of a herbaria, and basically there's a booklet that we produced around others to also manage herbaria. Next slide, please. They're just an example of the red list of South African plants and the GMO work we've done and the monitoring of threatened species, particularly in the fauna side. Okay. Then, carry on with our mandate, on the minister's request, we have to advise on the various international agreements. And one of the works that we've done, produced in the year in question, is the second national communication on the United Nations Climate Change Convention. The work that we did was presented to Cabinet, and after presented to Cabinet, it was used as the basis of the white paper that you then passed through Parliament last year, at the end of last year. And it was really a scientific study on what are the areas in South African society that most likely will have impact on climate change. And so as a result of that work that we did, not only Stanley, but we managed many of the scientists of South Africa, including people like Bob Scholes and Professor Vogel, etc., from WITS, who are globally renowned climate change scientists, and identified what are the areas that we must focus on when we're looking at what impact is going to be at climate change. Of course, biodiversity is very one of those, agriculture, health, construction, etc., etc. We have done work around planning and biodiversity tools for municipalities, work on making the case for biodiversity. I won't repeat all of this. I'm just thinking of what stands out for all of us is for the first time we've led national freshwater ecosystems priority areas. It is a comprehensive study that we've done together with CSIR. It's the first time. It is a representation of scientific work and mapping of all our rivers and freshwater, all our wetlands, as well as minor tributaries, and an analysis of the state of our rivers and what are the hardworking rivers and what are the rivers we must be looking at because they're stressing, etc., etc. It's called a rather odd title, IMFEPA, which is a National Freshwater Ecosystems priority areas. And really it is very worthwhile, I think, everybody reading that, and that was reduced there. And there are others which are in the thing, others that are in the presentation, and you're very welcome to have any of the information all on our website if you want to look at any of that, of those documentation. Very quickly, Chair, to say that in the year in question, we had made preparations for the new National Botanical Garden. We did the assessment and made the decision. Some of you who have been on this portfolio committee for a long time would remember this is an issue that was quite contentious about where it should be, and in the end we made decisions against a matrix of criteria that we feel will stand the rigor of both science as well as the population of South Africa. And what we wanted to do was to capture that unique Eastern Cape mixture of a number of biomes coming together in the Eastern Cape. We didn't have a garden in the Eastern Cape. The other criteria, it had to be of biodiversity value, and Kwelega Nature Reserve did have a biodiversity value. And thirdly, we wanted to be not far from an urban area because really, with this, our gardens really is our windows for urban folk to see a biodiversity and not to go to a national park, etc., etc. And so Kwelega Nature Reserve was where we finally settled on for the new National Botanical Garden. The difference this time, Chair, is that we're not going to buy the land. We are not going to take the land from the existing institution. We are going to joint manage the land with the Eastern Cape Parks and Tourism, which means that there's no exchange of money in buying land, which often has been the issue of other National Botanical Gardens, but we will jointly manage with Eastern Cape Parks and Tourism, but confer National Botanical Garden status on it. And just to tell you that. And then there's other information about biodiversity. Next slide, please. This is just some more examples of some of the work we've done, pollination work, the continuation of the vegetation map of South Africa. As you know, the vegetation map of South Africa really is a foundational natural history map that really forms the foundation of a lot of other information that we produce for science for the country. And this is just a depiction of our various gardens, windows into biodiversity. These, again, a continuation, and also where the P's are, P3, P1, shows you how we have managed, where we manage it. A number of the key outputs in the time in question, and I want to just focus maybe on the biodiversity management plans that we have done for advice, for CITES, for the minister, on pelargoniums, on cycads, etc. Next slide, please. There are some of the areas of work we've done on hippos, on leopards. on cycads and on medical plants. Next one, please. I think I won't go into this. I think you've got it in your presentation. This is a tool that we've worked with local authorities to map critical biodiversity areas. This one happens to be in the Kamisberg municipality, but we're doing it in others. It's the urban work that we're doing as well, overlaid with the fine-scale planning and biodiversity assessment work we're doing. Next slide, please. Some of the tools that we've produced and some of the work that we've used also in the presentation I wanted to just highlight. This indicates in the National Biodiversity Framework where Sandy plays a lead and key role. Next slide, please. It's a lot, and I put it in the presentation for you to see. And as the chair indicated when he made his brief input that he wanted to raise the issue of our chair, the chair of our board, he wanted to raise the issue of climate change, the issue of the fact that we've got unique biodiversity natural capital, the third most megadiverse country in the world, and that it is an asset that we should use well and sustainably. And the third area he talked about was the potential of jobs in our sector, which is enormous, and this is some of the work that we're doing around identifying jobs in our sector. Next slide, please. So, Chair, in our corporate strategic plan, I have given you a number of slides, but I've also want to give you our little Z folder. If you could just hand it out.
Madam? No. Give it to one of the officials.
Sorry.
The member must sit and concentrate on what
you're
saying.
Just to say, Chair, we have a 5-year corporate strategic plan, and it addresses all mandate responsibilities, including our international engagement in any projects that we have. Our board approves the corporate strategic plan annually. Even though it's a 5-year strategic plan, we revise it every year. It's now also revised by National Treasury and the Presidency. Out of that, we produce an annual performance plan, which is based on the corporate strategic plan, and this forms the basis of our annual audit. As you know, our annual audit every year is now also performance-based, and the Department of Environmental Affairs approves our corporate strategic plan as well as our annual performance plan, and we provide quarterly progress reports, which we receive very good feedback from them on a quarterly basis on progress. This is the organogram, and I won't go into detail on that. Next, please. This is just the way our different programs are delivered by our different structures. And I wanted to say that it is all in here in the Z folder, my next part of my presentation. Basically, it indicates that we have 7 programs and how we deliver, how we organize ourselves. So those 7 programs are set up there, and it's in the Z folder. Next, please. And the different strategic objectives under each program, it's also in this Z folder. We've managed to squeeze it into a Z folder. We hope that will help our stakeholders understand what it is we do, given how broad our mandate is, for people to understand what we do. So the next few slides are all within the Z folder, and for your own reading afterwards. But just to say, I wanted to highlight a few changes that was from 2010-11 to 2011-12. For us, a big change has been to streamline the organogram, particularly at the top, and to be very much more clearer at divisional level and director levels on roles and responsibilities and focusing on mandate. Given our mandate is so broad, the key is to have cross-cutting programs that allow us to work together and to have even clearer and smart targets in our CSP, and that we've managed to achieve over the last few years. the chair has indicated, our chair of the board has indicated that prioritization is key and consolidation. The year in question, we reduced the role and cost of our education program given its level of prioritization or priority in our act. But I'm pleased to indicate, Chair, that our education division, our education director has performed just as well with half the budget as they did with the full budget. So that's quite interesting. We also reduced our, took our urban program and made it into our board, brought by a regional program and reduced the numbers of lines of authority, etc. And the other big change in our view is the development of a monitoring framework for the organization that now allows all core business activities to contribute to a monitoring framework and allows us to manage much better. The other challenges that and gaps that we have is that it is problematic to it creates uncertainty to rely on outside financial resources, particularly donor funding financial resources. And so our big aim would be to get sustainable MTF funding going forward. The other issue I raised before is the prioritization of the delivery of our broad mandate. And we would participate in the NEMBA review because of and looking at the NEMBA review next year when you review the NEMBA, as well as having, getting guidance from our board, and also in a new national biodiversity framework to ensure that we don't get given tasks that we don't have the budget for, basically, which is what's happened at the NBF. There's a lack of natural sciences nationally, particularly zoologists, particularly taxonomists. And we have engaged with the Biodiversity Human Capital Development Strategy, particularly is going to look at this area. Meanwhile, we use the managed network and others, we use other institutions and harness the South African capacity around that. And we've engaged in new technologies and tools. Just to say, Honourable Chair, the world of taxonomy is changing rapidly. And the days of having scientists look down a microscope and make taxonomic decisions is moving. One of them is a move to genetics rather than morphology, as I said, rather the way you look, but your genetics is what helps you do taxonomy. And we are moving this year into really being much more IT-focused around that area of science than we did, compounded by the fact that actually zoologists are difficult to find globally, let alone in South Africa. So that's an interesting area. And then the issue about broadband, we've joined Sunrin, which allows us to have much better bandwidth to provide, to be able to download the very complex information and make it much more accessible to the public. If you remember, the last time I was here, Chair, I indicated that we were having difficulty around bandwidth with the complex information. We were able to launch the Biodiversity Advisor properly to the public because we joined Sunrin, which is a DST bandwidth program, rather than investing it in ourselves. And then finally, I think always remains a challenge to market our gardens, to have the enough capacity and ability to market our gardens in a way that will allow people to enjoy it more. And lastly, it's in your diagram, and you can't see it so well, but I think one of the issues raised last time was the link between the value that SAMBI provides and what it does, and we aimed here to show you that the work that we do, the research we do on ecosystem species, monitoring and reporting, actually in the end has value for creating markets for ecosystem services, allows for better and more sustainable policy decisions by both our department and other departments. And so this is a depiction of that work. And Chair, we need to go to the next thing, which is very briefly, our CFO will make a presentation on the finance. I just need to show my
Thank you.
ngikhuluma njani nje. Mara sikhulumile.
Chair, can I proceed?
Yes, please.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, members. Apologies for the date. We have made this available long ago because we were supposed to do it on the 3rd. That's why I haven't changed the date for today, because the slide that we have sent to you was for the 3rd of May when we were supposed to present. I'm going to take you, the presentation outline will be the MTF allocation, the non-MTF revenue. I think the CEO has referred to the money which is not MTF and sustainable money. I think we would just like to bring that to the fore. Funders, own revenue, total budget, possible future funding, and also the regional budget breakdown for the 2012-13 financial years. See, this is the allocation letter from our mother department. This is the money that they've made available with us, and also this is how they kind of identify the money. So if they presented their budget to you, you will also then identify with these funds. So the operational allocation, you can see our operational allocation is only for this current financial year 147 million rand, and it's growing to 169 million rand to the 14-15 financial year. Climate change research is 10 million rand right through. There's no increase in that. Implementation of the business case is 50 million rand right through for all 3 years. Combating wildlife crime is 2 million rand. Infrastructure investment is only in the 3rd year where they're going to increase it with 600,000 rand. But if one goes back in history, and perhaps I must do it in the next year's presentation, do a kind of a comparison, one will see this is for many years is kind of stuck on 10 million rand, which means in fact that in our net present value it is degrading, you know, we don't even make provision for the inflation increases in terms of that. So that is a kind of a risk. And infrastructure expansion of botanical gardens is the 5 million rand and is growing up to 6 million rand. Next slide, thank you. Thank you. The non-MTF revenue check for this current financial year, the 2012-13, is a DR allocation expanded public works, that's merely for working for wetlands, it's about 93 million rand. The DR NRM, that's working for water, where also we have been worked together with working for water, it's about 38 million rand. And other government departments like the Department of Science and Technology is just over 6 million rand. But all of this money is project-based money, so this is not baseline money, so this is based on project money. The next slide, thank you. Funders, funding, other funders. I do have a full list of other funders, which is about 11 million rand, and foreign funders is about 26 million rand, which is also project-based money, so that's not money which is sustainable for our achieving the mandate. Our own revenue sales is more the plants and seeds and books, is about 2 million rand, not a lot of money. Admission fees is about 31 million rand. Rentals is our restaurants and other rentals about 9 million rand. And other donations for these chairs or benches in the gardens is about 84,000 rand. That's not material, but there are money around that. So just to give you a summary of all our funding, and I think this is kind of a very important slide, the MTF funding for this current year is 204 million rand. Other government departments is 157 million rand project-based money, which also include DIA's support through NRM, National Resource Management, working for water and also the working for wetlands. Other foreign funders about 57 million rand. Our own income is the sales plus the revenue, gate revenue is about 42 million rand. Then our total budget is 422 million rand. If one look at this, one will see less than 50% is MTF baseline money. So if this project money, we are at risk, and I think that's why the CEO has put it in her challenges that we need more sustainable money for to sustain our mandate. MTF future funding, I think the minister has announced in the budget speech the job funds. We are quite far of that. The contract, I think, will be signed by the end of the month. I don't want to commit myself on that. The CEO can do that. But about 300 million rand for the next 3 years. And then also for the Sandy Centenary is about 10 million rand. That money will not come to us. That's the indicative amount that we try to raise money to have next year the Sandy Centenary. A breakdown of the different programs or the divisions, as the CEO has indicated. Chair, I can take you through each of those lines, but I think the bottom line is that we've balanced back to the sustainable funding from MTF, it's 204 million rand. Trading, we also allocate that for them to achieve their mandate, it's about 2.2 million rand. And then other income, our own income is in 40 million rand, which we also divide between the other programs. That, I think, is a budget for the current financial year. See, the other slide, I see the weather service hasn't done, but I can do it if you want. It's more to reflect on the previous financial year statements. If you want me to go through that one, it's 3 or 4 slides. I don't know. I'm prepared for that, so I can just as well take you through that. So this is, thank you, is there a slideshow up there, thank you. View show. That's one, thank you. Chair, the same with the date, apologies for the date, you can just go to the next slide, thank you. That's the presentation outline. Chair, now this is a summary and a short description of what happened in the previous financial years. The net deficit was 2.27 million compared with the previous year 10.8 million rand deficit. So one can see there was a stringent measures that they put in to make sure that we can live with our budget. Donations increased by 6%. The following sponsorship decreased in comparison with the previous financial year. Remember, this is now the 10-11 financial year, and that we compare that with the 19-11 financial year. Government sponsored projects, that's those that I've talked to, decreased by 7%. Foreign decreased by 77%. The reason for that is the World Bank project are almost at the end. It came down from 20 million rand, I think, to 6 million rand. That's a big contributor to that decrease. Individuals and organizations, 11%. Trust, 4%, 5% others. Government grants constitute about 46. That was over that financial year. 46 of overall income. And other grants responsibilities, I've indicated to you in the previous slides, from other grants, it's about 41% of overall income. This reflects SANMI's continued dependence on sponsorship to fulfill large part of his mandate. So we're really dependent on sponsorship. Admission fees constitute about 8% of the total income. Chair, this is more the expenses. One will see that our personal cost is about 42% of total budget. And then also the project-related personnel cost is about 7% of the total budget, and operating expenses about 24%. The difference is the capital expenditure. The liabilities is the retirement benefit of obligations of 33%. Project fund unspent, the money one must, you might ask the question, why do we don't spend the money? The money is that because they pay us up front, we can only use that money for the specific projects. We cannot use it for something else, and we must keep it in our books and in our accounts for that. Trade and other payables is 37%. If I report a liability, I'd have to report the assets also. Our land and buildings about 107 million rand. The vehicles, 4 million rand. I must say our vehicles are getting very old lately. Equipment is 5. That's your normal equipment. That's your movable equipment. It's about 5 million rand. Total asset value is 116 million rand. And an intangible assets is more your IT equipment. Is about 2.2 million rand. I think the most important thing of the previous financial year is that we have obtained an unqualified audit report for many years, and we also, I will show you now in terms of the next slide, our dashboard that we also try, well, we endeavor to have a clean audit this year also. If you can just go to the next one, is part of that is escape. There is a handover, but we have made it also available. Is escape? Go to that Word document, thank you.
The dashboard,
thank you. Chair, I think we didn't have it in our pack, but when I saw Weather Services has presented that and the members has indicated it's a very important document, I thought that we must also start to brag with our achievements. In our fourth quarter, Chair, one will see there's only 4 yellow faces. The 2 upper yellow faces, there's also a handout in terms of this. The upper faces is that it's about the human resources strategic framework. That's already been developed. We're just waiting for a board approval. I think in the May meeting we will approve that. Then if one goes to the financial and performance management yellow faces, the timing, they've done it early in April. We have not closed the fourth quarter. If they have assessed us a week later, we would have also green faces in that one. So the only faces in terms of our readiness for this financial year, in terms of the financial statements and the auditor general's assessment, I think we are ready also to this year to produce clean financial statements, and also in terms of their assessment, I think this is something to feel proud of, that we have almost all green faces in this in our readiness for the financial statements. Chair, that's my song. I hope you find it informative.
Thanks, you are really singing. I'm happy you are not a teacher. Slow learners wouldn't catch up with you. Speaking very fast. Thanks very much for this nice presentation. I will then open for clarifications, questions, comments from members. Mrs. Swenga Scotty, in that order.
Thank you, Chair. One is just a comment. I'm rather concerned about the 10 million on the infrastructure investment that is in this segment and continuously year in, year out. Because that is an area of concern if you want to maintain what there is and preserve it. And that also does not sustain cater for any expansion or improvement or anything for that particular. The other, the question basically is, I would like to know the reason for the decrease in sponsorship on forums. 77%,
which
is a huge jump. I'd like to know the reason for that. Thank you. Chairperson, thank you very much. I'm still waiting to hear about audited statement. Maybe whether they've got qualified or unqualified.
No, he did say that. He did mention it.
Oh, okay. Chairperson, one of the areas that I want to know is the awareness that they're talking about. Where do they conduct it and how? So that I know, in fact, I believe that when you conduct an awareness, it must be accessed by the community. How and where do they conduct that assessment? And they can even a little bit to unfold on their program of awareness countrywide. And also, Chairperson, on the access of biodiversity information and collections. So I think it's quite important to hear a little bit on that matter. And the project funds and spend commitments of 30%. What is the reason not to spend the whole of this money? Unlike to have 30% unspent. Hence we are talking about the development. We are talking about the botanic gardens, and the botanic gardens are in housing at towns over at Pretoria, but the money is unspent. Can you just get a clarity on that one, Chairperson? And the presenters, they are so fast in such a way that really, if you are not an academic, you can't grasp the information you grasp. As they run across the last week to say, I don't know, but, and also, Chairperson, I should think, this section of our department was still learning about it. We have not yet catch up your system. But one day, we'll catch you. We'll catch you, and we'll discuss with you at length. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Now, you know, it's very much important that we receive this document in time. You can hear the concern from the member that he hasn't been able to catch up with the presenters. And indeed, if you haven't read this in time, it becomes very much difficult to catch up with the presenter. Like my friend who was singing here, he was not talking. Definitely. So if you haven't read this before, you are going to struggle to catch up with him. Maybe I'm tempted to add on Mr. Skosana's question regarding the dissemination of information to local communities. You know, this endangered species that you are talking about, that you want to protect and conserve, at the rural areas there, they have been destroyed because of lack of knowledge. So how do you make those people aware that they have to conserve these things? I mean, most of these people, they don't have this communication, new facilities for communication. They don't have internet, they don't have all these things. They only depend on local radios and people convening meetings. So how do you disseminate information to them? So that they know what we are doing, they know what they are supposed to do. My other question have already been covered by Mrs. Wenger about the reasons regarding the decrease in the donor funding. Charlie, do you have any other question? I know you are our financial person.
I'm not a financial person. What I just like to know is MTA allocation for your climate change, 10 million. Then from the your budget inside is only spent for the 5.3 million, yeah? Your division budget, yeah? From your division budget, you only utilize 5.3 million. So I just like to know what is the other money you underspend. And I'm quite happy because Sambi last year in this committee is quite big problem for Sambi. So this year you got more improving. I saw from the Auditor General this side, I think he's quite happy for all of your performance. But I think it is your auditor report, we still didn't receive in all the full report. It's an unqualified one. So we want to know is when we can see your annual report, all the detail you got. You submit. I didn't see this one here. So you say you are
part. Come late, Charlie.
I come late, yeah, maybe. You see. But I didn't see the detail here. Yeah. So I just from the list of report, I'm quite happy the Sunday is improving, yeah. Because it's a deficit, it's already less, it's from 10 million to the 2.7 million. So I think this one is quite good for improving. Thank you.
Yeah, I can respond.
Yeah.
So perhaps just to respond specifically to the question with regards to the infrastructure investment. One of the members, the infrastructure investment for in the budget is not 10 million, is 30 million. But the point you're making is valid because it's been 30 million and it's been like that for a long time. It is a concern because if we do not invest in maintaining our infrastructure, let alone building new infrastructure, we are going to get caught up as we have been in other areas in this country where we do not invest in infrastructure, and then now it became a big problem. And it is not a lack of requesting for more money from government, but government allocates as they see fit. It is therefore in the interest of us to request you to work with us in partnership to convince government that there is need to invest in infrastructure in this area. Secondly, the area that was raised about 10 million rand, which is climate change. South Africa plays a very pivotal role, not only in South Africa, not only in Africa, but in the world with regards to inputting into the negotiations, inputting into the science around adaptation for climate change, adaptation of plants and animals as the climate changes. And 10 million rand is really, all what it says is that government thinks that it's worth only 10 million rand per year for investment in that area. And I think that's an area, again, that will require some support to say that if South Africa is going to continue to play its leading scientific role and strategic role in inputting into the international debate, we need to have adequate resources in this area.
Okay. Thank you. I wanted to say on the visit of the Portfolio Committee to the Gardens, I'm asking my colleague Mokete Kwafi, who is responsible around communications and corporate, to take total responsibility that within the next 2 months you at least visit Kirstenbosch, which is nearby you, if not the ones which are in your constituency, or potential ones which are in your constituency. And I'm going to ask him to get his colleague on marketing and we'll report directly to him.
But maybe whilst you are sitting,
yes,
at Kirstenbosch, do we have people ready to can guide people I'm sure there were 1, 2, 3 there. I've been there quite several times, but just to have some drinks in the restaurant. So I just saw these photos there. I haven't seen anybody guiding people to all these people.
No, we do have guides, Honourable Chair. We also have golf carts, but particularly for people with because it's very steep. So age, disability, or tiredness will allow you to have a golf cart also with a guide in there. So I think we just need to arrange it, and I'm asking Moketsi Kwafli to make sure that we have it. Other gardens, not so extensive and not so steep, where we don't have guides. But I think that the issue about guides is a very good one. We'll take it on board going forward. Thanks. I won't say anything more about the 10 million stagnant. Tom Bauer, who was previously the CFO of the Department of Environmental Affairs, will obviously help us to ensure. One of the things, Chair, is that we've got the capacity to build sustainable infrastructure in the organization. And so we have got the ability to absorb and convert, you know, rands to bricks and mortar that are useful assets. So I think that's the argument that we will make. But definitely with the expansion to Eastern Cape and to Toyando, we will be looking to expand our 10 million thing. The decrease of sponsorship for foreign, there are a number of reasons for that decrease. The first one is that very big projects that were started in the last decade, 6-year-long projects, 5-year-long projects, 10-year-long projects were coming to an end. For example, a very big World Bank project that we've been working around the Fynbos biome in this part of the world as coming to an end. So that is one of the reasons why it looks like a big dip. The other reason is because there has been a global turndown in terms of finances from overseas. But just to reassure you, Chair, that we see the new GEF, the Global Environmental Facility cycle now has restarted, and we also are going to receive money from the Global Adaptation Fund going forward. And so I think in those two areas will change that, but it has been a dip in the year in question. I don't know if anybody has, if we can see or anybody else want to say anything more, Alan, on that. The 30% unspent, I mean, the reason why on budget it looks like 30% unspent, it is allocated to projects, and many projects don't run in a one financial year. They run over 3 financial years, and so that the funds arrive in the beginning of a project, and we have to roll them over going into the future. So they're not unspent money. Having come from a history of a deficit of something like 10 million and now a deficit of something like 1.5 million, we would not be able to afford or to have unspent money. But this is allocated money that comes from donor funding or other sources for a specific project, and it rolls over and it's more than one financial year. I don't know if you want to say anything more than that, Tom?
No,
or
Moketsi?
Is that the correct response? Okay.
Yeah, but madam,
yeah,
I think you should have phrased this thing in a manner that we can understand. Because you just say 30%
unspent
committed funds. What does that say to us?
I think it's the word committed, Chair, that we assume when it's committed it means it's for a project. But I understand that. I think the language needs to be improved, and our CFO will take note of that.
Yes, I'll take note of that, but we put it that committed word in so that you realize it's not loose money, that money's already been identified, but we take note of what you
but
said.
But we say this money was committed but was never used because of laziness.
No, it's not. But next time we'll give you a better explanation. Agree, we will make it a better presentation next year. It's not laziness, it's a project cycle. That's the reason for that. But we take note of that. We will present it better next time.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I want to answer a number of questions around the issue of catch-up, because I think it's about access to information, it's about training, it's about awareness, about biodiversity, a whole lot of things which I think comes to the issue of catch-up. And there is a history, and I don't want to talk about history because you know much more than we do about the history of this country. But the fact of the matter is that biodiversity and management of conservation and management of species and ecosystems and the landscape, our ancestors have done it for many, many, many centuries. But in the last 200 centuries, biodiversity and conservation has become and seems to be an elitist engagement. And so with the result, Chair, that we do not find the majority of our people having engaged in biodiversity and conservation. And in fact, many of our people were forcibly removed from areas which were made to be conservation areas. And so the issue about awareness and catch-up is one of the key and most important roles we must play. Because in our view, if we are not relevant to the people of South Africa in terms of jobs, in terms of value, even in terms of spiritual value, then we may as well not exist. So the issue of awareness and education and communication is one of our key concerns. So the work that we're doing on making the case, and I skipped very quickly through that process, really is about saying, do we understand what biodiversity is? Do we understand what conservation? Do we understand why we protect? Do we understand the value of biodiversity capital and the assets we've got in this country? What does it mean for the majority of people in this country to be mega diverse? Is there some way that we can use biodiversity without destroying it to overcome poverty and poverty alleviation? So in the making of the case and the work we've been doing, not on the ground in the case of making the case, but with other institutions and our colleagues in our cluster of institutions, that was really important. Otherwise, where we have created awareness is in all the projects that we've worked on, in all the bioregional projects we've worked on, in the Working for Wetlands program, in the Sakhalin Kalaru program in the Northern Cape, in the Cape program in the Western Cape, in the Eastern Cape program that we have around the unique vegetation there, and very importantly in the grasslands program, a large part of it is around awareness, because it's because of the complex nature of the sector, we have to use practical examples of what is biodiversity. But specifically in my report and in our annual report, you will see a report on our CRU program, which is a community-based barefoot scientist program where communities go and look out for threatened species and threatened plants and report back to us through a system, through a central system of information, including via cell phone, taking pictures of plants and sending it back to a central database. That is our CRU program. In our rapid response program with alien invasives, a lot of that is around awareness of alien invasives, because we cannot do the whole thing ourselves, neither can the department and their natural resource management program. So a lot of that is about that. And then, of course, the fact that we are based in gardens in 10 places in South Africa, that is a really center of awareness. And I think your comment about a guide in the garden is also part of getting better awareness. I think that's all. I just, very last, Chair, our colleague has rightly pointed out that the Division of Climate Change and Adaptation has only got some 5 million set for it, but yet we get a 10 million climate change research budget. And that is because almost all of the organization does something around climate change. in the division that Professor Donaldson is involved in, a lot of the basic foundational work contributes to our better understanding of climate change. And our climate change division, which is headed by Guy Midgley, is very much taking information from the whole organization and providing concrete policy advice to government about the ways to go. And works very much with modeling that requires information from other parts of Sandy to produce a model that gives good information. So on the structure, you will see our climate change has got a 5 million grand budget, but in fact, we use climate change budget, that 10 million climate change budget, for a whole lot of work that builds up to us giving a better climate change information. I think that's it. I think the other one was about cost cutting, and I think we're just making comments.
Any other follow-up? Sally?
Chair, I mentioned that they have the total funding for 422 million, but I didn't see the orders in the financial annual report, so I can't see for what they spend the orders and the funding for the 2012-13 UAP get the order funding. 422 million. But now, at the moment, your old budget is 240 million. It's right.
I think we must ask our colleagues, our officials in the parliament. We delivered our annual report some time ago, but we brought some copies. Can we give you the copy? I think that will clarify the question. We were hoping that everybody would have the annual report in front of them, and then we would just summarize it and answer questions on it. But
no, that's all, madam. It's understandable. Mm-hmm. I think there was some mistake somewhere somehow between Guanele and Chilega. They did give it to us, but she didn't check the whole packet. So it's really not your mistake. Yes, sir.
Honourable Chair, members, just in response to one of the issues that has been mentioned by the issue of catching up. I think it's quite critical in us working as a partnership while there are also engagements for other role, that we do what we can to actually inform and arm you with knowledge that we. As far as I'm concerned, we'd like to invite you to Sandy. We can host you in one of the gardens and take you through some of the activities, and I'm now committing the board and management to doing that. Taking you through the seven programs that Tanya mentioned, and say what are we actually doing, what is the objective of each of the programs, what are we prioritizing, and why are we prioritizing those things, because I think that's quite critical. To help you to challenge us during this debate.
Thanks. I think you'll communicate with Chilega, and she will tell us when can we go there. Huh? No. Charlie, I've explained this clearly to say they did give it to us. But it ended up somewhere where one was a little bit negligent not to check as to whether they've included them in the package. So I thought we've closed this. That's nobody's mistake, according to me. It would be corrected. And let me take this opportunity to thank the chairman of the board, the CEO and the team. It was really good. We appreciate the work that we are doing, and we are looking forward for further engagements with you. So thank you very much. The meeting is therefore adjourned.
Thank you.